Hi, and welcome to Do La La, the podcast.
With me, Leanne from Birthhood, and Meg from Birth Evolution. We are both birth and postnatal doulas with over 12 years' experience supporting people through pregnancy, birth, and the postnatal period.
In this podcast, we'll be taking a deep dive into birth in a relaxed and informal space, bringing you knowledge, experience, and tips in a way that supports you, whether you are pregnant, working in the birth world, or just a birth nerd like us.
We'll be leaving no stone unturned with our unfiltered approach to conversation about birth and can't wait for you to join us.
All opinions are, of course, our own, and our experiences and discussions in no way constitute medical advice.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Do La La podcast. We are here with a new episode. It's me, Meg, from Birth Evolution.
And me, Leanne, from Birthhood. I nearly forgot my name again.
I was going to say, nearly forgot your name. We're doing well today. What we want to start doing a little bit more of in some of our episodes is being really practical and really supporting those of you who are pregnant or planning to be pregnant in terms of how you navigate pregnancy, how you navigate labour and birth in as practical a way as possible. Today we are going to focus on preparing for an appointment, basically how you can gear yourself up, get yourself feeling really confident for going into any kind of appointment, right? So let's try and think of all the types of appointments people will go to. Obviously, reminding everybody that all of this maternity care is completely optional. Standard set of appointments would be, one, booking an appointment. So around here, it's about 8 weeks.
8 weeks,
So booking in. Then, depending on whether it's your first or a subsequent baby, you'll then have midwife appointments. I've been pregnant 3 times and I now can't remember it.
It's just so much.
Yeah. 16, obviously, there'll be a scan at 12 weeks, dating scan, anomaly scan at 20 weeks. But is there a midwife appointment at 16 weeks? But then that real regularity of midwife appointments is about 28, 30 weeks, and then usually about fortnightly from there. Weekly once you reach that full term state, but then that will depend on if it's your first or a subsequent baby. Subsequent babies, I remember it always used to feel a little bit like you were kind of just cast away into the wind.
Yeah, you know what you're doing. You've done it before.
Of course you do. Now, that's just midwifery. Obviously, for any particular circumstances, there are a whole load of other appointments that you may have in there, depending on if there's referrals for growth scans or gestational diabetes tests or consultant appointments. And every person will be unique. So what I wanted to start with, and I'd love to get your views on this, Leanne, is why would we need to prepare for an appointment? So, like, why are we even doing this podcast episode? Why is it that we would expect somebody to do anything in advance of going to an appointment?
I mean, I think the key thing is that the pregnancy is yours. So going in with some level of preparation means that you get to keep some of that autonomy, I think, is the main thing. And preparing yourself, like, mentally for good things and bad things. Like, how are you going to respond with the information that you are given? And that can really sway you. So it's for me, I know it was the understanding of what I was allowed to, what I could say yes or no to. But also,
do you mean understanding that before you went
before,
in?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, my first pregnancy, I was a bit kind of no idea. I didn't do any preparation for the first few. And I didn't even really think about going for that first scan, for example, and the fact that all I assumed is I'm going to see my baby, blah, 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 blah. I didn't think about the other things that that might lead to a cascade of.
I don't think I even realised there would be an appointment. I think I just thought you went for a scans were just a scan.
Yeah.
I certainly wasn't really aware that a scan would also potentially come alongside an appointment to discuss it as well. I think I just thought, you go in and there'll be a nice picture and then you'll go back to work.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. I think that was it. And it was kind of, and the confusion, how many people know they have the booking appointment and they date their pregnancy roughly based on stupid Nageli's rule, but then they go and have a new date given to them because computers are God, and they see all, know all, be all. And we, our dates change, and it's those sorts of things where most people will go, okay, yeah, fine, and then move away from that thing. So without having a knowledge that actually scans can be inaccurate, or what do I do with this information when I come home because they've changed my dates, how I'm now panicking, where do I go to work out what I need to do? And a lot, I assume, of pregnant folk go into that scan because and unprepared, because again we're in a society where we condition, are conditioned to be a certain way, but then come out with and just kind of go just acceptance of what they're told in that scan. So if you're going in prepared, then you've got an opportunity to potentially challenge or at least come away with some kind of I don't know, guidance of how you can take that whatever you're told for.
Well, you hit the nail on the head when you said autonomy, that we all know that we're adults, we're grown-ups, we can make our decisions and so on, but actually autonomy comes from knowing something before you are then exposed to a particular context, doesn't it, that it's very difficult to grab autonomy once you're in the middle of something. I think that's true for anything. You know, if you're going for a work meeting or a job interview or an appointment at the bank about a mortgage, any of that stuff, you wouldn't hope to become the decision maker partway through. You'd go in there understanding. And I think I say this to a lot of people about questioning things during pregnancy, that you would never expect to go through banking processes, any legal processes to do with buying a house or job, you know, any of that without challenging or questioning or being a bit cynical perhaps. But in pregnancy,
How much preparation do we do for those sorts of things? And yet pregnancy is one of the things where if you went in for, like, say, a mortgage application and you were completely blindsided by something, like that changes your future and you'd be massively impacted. Pregnancy is exactly the same. In fact, I would say
more so,
and you've got more opportunities to be blindsided by something. So preparation for something like birth and pregnancy is, in obviously we know the importance of it, and it's just, for me, it's scary that we kind of, and we know that you have all these appointments, but you have so little time in those appointments.
Well, that's the next thing, isn't it, is why do you need to prepare? Because the system we are in the middle of right now is not going to give you the luxury of time and the information you expect. So many people say to me, I thought a midwife appointment would tell me this stuff. I thought I would learn it from my midwife. And this is in no way an issue with the midwives. But when you look at the appointments, of how limited that time is, about 15 minutes. And when we're talking about your average, your normal midwife appointment during sort of mid to late stage of pregnancy, you've got peeing in a pot, checking that, you've got having blood pressure perhaps, you've got having a fundal measurement, tick boxing whatever in that gestation is required in terms of, have we asked about this, have we asked about this, have we asked about this, are they aware of that, are they aware of that? And then all of that stuff serves a purpose. I'm not saying all that stuff should be cast aside, but where then is the 30 seconds of conversation that might actually allow some autonomy of conversation? It's just not.
If you take the booking appointment, the first thing that you'll be asked in that booking appointment will be, where are you going to choose to have this baby? And you're like, okay, I don't know. What are my options? And you go, well, this is
exactly that. It's exactly, I remember the room. I remember the seat I was sitting in, first pregnant, didn't know any of this because we don't come with a manual for pregnancy, do we? And I remember her saying, where are you going to give birth? I was like, what I choose? There's other places? And I just immediately, at the very first opportunity of being a pregnant adult, I felt stupid.
Yeah.
And she wasn't meaning to make me feel that way.
No.
But why is that even a question on the form to fill in, when most people are coming at this not having a clue if it's their first baby?
In my opinion, if you're going into that first booking appointment and it is about kind of, you choose, so again, like we said, everything's a choice. If you're then opting in to the system for having scans and things like that, that first appointment should be, right, if you're opting in for scans, we need to know where you want your booking to be for scans. Which hospital would you like? Yeah. We are going to discuss place of birth at some point. This is an ideal world, mm-hmm. by the way. And this is why preparation is important, because if you're having that conversation at 8 weeks, and then you've then, yeah. I know you can change your mind, by the way, everybody. You don't, if you book at 8 weeks somewhere and then you change to a different birth centre or a different hospital or a home birth, that's fine. But how many people then go, well, I've booked this now, and then don't explore anything else because they don't know that they've got another option, and then they've booked it. It's like with this is a completely different topic, but like later on down the line, if you have an appointment and they talk about induction and they go, it's booked, and you go, I obviously have to go to that now.
Yeah.
It's the fact that the reason you prepare for any appointment is because then you, the one that can take control and make mm-hmm. the choices. Otherwise, the choices are made for you. And then if you don't know your options past that, you're stuck on a pathway, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you certainly feel like you are. I think it's something that just, I think it's really worth just what we were saying before about banks and mortgage appointments and things is I think the general public would generally assume, they will assume they are going to be coerced, blindsided, swindled by a mortgage advisor, an estate agent, a bank. You know where I'm going with this. People generally will never, ever, ever presume that they are going to be coerced, blindsided or swindled by a healthcare professional. And I don't want to like throw in there that, by the way, you're all going to be blindsided and swindled by healthcare professionals. But
most of you are at some point.
But we really need to put healthcare systems up there in, you are at risk of being screwed over on some level. And I'm not saying will be, I'm saying at risk of. So that is what we're
need that's to hilarious though. We need to come back to that at another point, because you just said it's not will happen, it's at risk of. Yeah, in healthcare professional appointments, when you're told you're at risk at something, you are driven in that this will happen, so you make a choice based on that. Whereas, again, it's how those languages use.
Yeah. Risk doesn't mean guarantee. So I'm really careful. No. You are at risk of coercion in maternity, but please don't think that it's an absolute given. It's just something to be aware of. You are at risk of postpartum hemorrhage.
Yep.
But please be aware of it. It probably won't happen. It's just something to be aware of. It doesn't have to change your whole... Yeah, love it.
It's
so
mad.
Many
it
podcasts
mad.
That come from our podcast episodes. Right.
I know, right?
So in terms of preparing for the appointments, obviously that will depend massively on... So if you think practically on what preparation to do, that's going to depend massively on... what the appointment is for. So is it a booking appointment? Is it a gross scan? Is it a consultant appointment? Is it about a health condition? Who the appointment is with? So sonographer, midwife, registrar, consultant, and so on. What gestation you are at doesn't necessarily change whether you should prepare or not. But how you prepare for an 8-week booking appointment will differ to how you prepare for a 36-week consultant appointment. But also, it will vary depending on what you want. So that's feeding in that autonomy again. Is what happens in that appointment is driven by what you want from the appointment. And I think most people don't realise that you get to go in these appointments with a desirable outcome.
It's that hierarchy, isn't it, of birth? The top of that hierarchy for birth is you as the pregnant person, not the doctor, not... And then that, again, feeds into the am I allowed thing. And that's why, again, preparation before you go in is important, because then you're not told, oh, you're not allowed this. You go, okay, you come away. And then you hear stuff that people go, no, you are allowed. And you get so confused. But you, again, it is that's why knowing, as you said, those four areas... And thinking ahead with those four areas means that you can kind of keep that autonomy. So important. So important.
I think I could speak for myself, and I'm somebody who certainly from my second pregnancy onwards was very well informed. By my third pregnancy, I was already a doula. I still would feel anxious and nervous going into probably every single appointment. And actually, I'm in a position where I didn't face consultant appointments, sort of high risk conversations. I was deemed low risk. Speech marks, eye rolling. But I think the vast majority of people who are pregnant will generally rock up to any of these kind of appointments with some form of apprehension, nerves, worry.
Yeah.
Do you feel the same? Would you have felt the same?
Absolutely.
Would you say your clients feel the same?
Absolutely. I think that's why a lot of people hire us as doulas, is because they are, especially for subsequent pregnancies, because they, in their first one, have often feel that anxiety, and then they come out and they feel anxious, even more anxious, fearful, scared, maybe sometimes forced into a thing, and they're like, I don't want this again. They absolutely, especially if they don't know what they're, how many times people go and they have booked in for a consultant appointment, they don't know what the consultant appointment is for. Then they get there and they're going, right, but this appointment is to book in your induction, and we talk about the induction, they're like, what for? And then next thing you know, they've walked out and they've booked in for an appointment at induction at 38 weeks, and they've gone, well, I didn't realise that, I didn't know what I was going in for. And I'm thinking, I mean, I have got a client at the moment who the hospital rang them and said, you need to come in. And she said, what for? She was like, apparently, obviously I wasn't on the phone, the midwife had rang and said, I don't know, I've just been told to call you to come in. So she went in, and it was something to do with kind of restricted growth, and it wasn't, but that's what, when they got there, but then they went in.
Why are we ringing somebody up to request to see them with no knowledge for that person of what that is? In what other field would anybody be requested to go and have a meeting with somebody without an indication of what that meeting is for? That blows my mind.
Blows my mind. And I think, but because it's something to do with, because you've got a baby growing inside you, you're not going to decline that. Because if it's something that you need to go for, people turn up. And again, that's coercion. That's them using that emotional element to get you there.
So actually what there needs to be, I mean, we're going to go through the sort of top things to think about. But what needs to happen there is it shouldn't be on the responsibility of the pregnant person to ultimately find out what that appointment is for. Because that's going to make a world of difference. And if you don't know, whether it's something you want to have an appointment for or not, you are already on the back foot if you enter a room with no... You know, it's like if you were called into your line manager's office with no idea why, you're going to think the worst, you're going to feel on edge until it materialises what the conversation is about. We do plan for these podcast episodes, folks. I know it might sound sometimes like we're just off the cuff, incredibly informed chat. No, winging it in a really informed and intellectual way.
Well, I've got my I've got our plan in front of us, so I know that we plan it.
Yes, we do. We like people to believe that we're just, we just sometimes get really excited. So what we've done is basically put down what... So I've got six things that we think are really important for you to think about before you approach an appointment. But obviously there will be lots of other things, and it'd be really interesting to see if people kind of contact us with things that they would like to recommend as well. But number one, we've already touched on this, know yourself, know your... So forgetting the appointment itself, know your context and your circumstances in as much detail as you can. So if I am first time pregnancy or first time birth, I don't have any medical conditions that I'm aware of, I don't have any risk factors that I'm aware of, then it might just be some general understanding of me as a person in terms of my medical history. However, you, Leanne, let's say you're going in, so I obviously know your life a little bit. If you were going in with pregnancy number two, in birth number one, you had a hemorrhage. That would be a different set of context to be going in there armed with. So you might go in there with a lot more knowledge and research and becoming the expert on postpartum hemorrhage, because it's going to come up in that appointment when you're pregnant again.
Oh, it did.
Absolutely. How early, out of curiosity?
Very early. Well, it started at my 20 week scan, but the difference was that my youngest, she had renal kidney function issues in utero, okay. which then she needed to be monitored every 2 weeks, and then it got a bit longer later on, because her she was double what they should be. It just meant that her kidneys weren't flushing out. So if I got too, if I got too fueled with adrenaline and then that impacted her, there was a risk to her not cleansing those toxins out, okay. which could cause a problem. Which again, I became an expert in that and realised that when I was told I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. And I was like, well, I can, I just need to be mindful of, so I did lots of relaxation activities and lots of, and I was doing hypnobirthing anyway to kind of really make sure that I was in a calm state as much as possible.
So you didn't wait for somebody to tell you how to manage that?
No, I did it myself.
Did anybody tell you how to manage that?
No, what they told me was to book an induction or a cesarean, because then we can kind of control when she comes. And I was like, right, that doesn't make sense to me, because I, and then that led into, well, you did hemorrhage last time. And I was like, no, I know, right. but we know now there's a complication as to why a hemorrhage. It wasn't a general kind of a bleed. I had a lovely birth. It was, it wasn't anything to do with the birth as to why my bleed happened. So they were like, yeah, so then an induction would stop that. I was like, no, we know that that wouldn't again, but if I wasn't informed as I was, that conversation would have been very different. I actually changed my consultant at that point as well, because he lied. What he said to me in my to my face was very different what he wrote down in my letter. And he was telling me that, yes, cesarean would be the best option. She would be whisked away. I wouldn't probably meet her initially. And she would probably go straight down to surgery to have her kidneys checked or something. And I was like, right, absolutely petrified then. Didn't write any of this down in the letter. And I was like, okay, so I instantly asked for something new, but they were automatically suggesting X, Y, Z. But I didn't get any evidence. I didn't get any information about what was going on, the evidence behind why they recommended anything. I was just, and it is, it's not, I want to say lucky that I had the skill set and the autonomy and the research that I had, but I don't think, like, it shouldn't be about that, should it, really? Yeah, like, there needs to be that level of autonomy that you go, I am pregnant, I take responsibility. But there should also be a level of trust and respect from your healthcare providers that they share relevant, up-to-date information to make help you make choices.
So did you, you knew enough about your context pre-appointments to be able to kind of up your knowledge in advance of appointments?
Yeah. Okay. I had to, because I was going every 2 weeks to scan her kidneys. So, and I was just like, well, I need to know what level they need to be at. And they turned around and said they needed to be at 7, and they started at 14, and they creeping up, and then they got down. And when they said that needed to be at 7 to discharge me, but they discharged me at 10. I think they discharged me at 10 because I refusing to follow their guidelines. But again, that's my, that was my choice based on my research. I was able to to make that.
So it's whatever that context is. So whether you are pregnant with twins, whether you've got a high BMI, whether you have got a another kind of any other health condition, a something previous that's happened in a pregnancy, is it your second, third, fourth birth? Is it, have you had a bleed previously? Do you have I mean, the list could be endless, but know what your context is. So once you start finding out further things, do you already know that you have a low-lying placenta, an anterior placenta? Do, basically, as soon as information comes out that you know about yourself, that shifts your context, become an expert in that. And of course, we say become an expert. We don't mean go and do a, you know, don't train in obstetrics, but like... understand what does low-lying placenta mean, just jumping on that one. Are the limitations in terms of what scans can you have, how can you find out more, what are the likelihoods, what are the chances of just really knowing your scenario, because what they will do is treat you as a number with that characteristic. So you will be simply a code number in the system with placenta previa or low-lying placenta. That won't take into account anything about you. You will be X number with suspected gestational diabetes. And then so continues a checklist kind of driven pathway, and it never
completely
brings
blanket
you into
care.
It. Yeah.
Complete blanket care. If you're,
if you were the only one really who's going to bring you into an appointment. So What is number really two, cool. Leanne?
Well, I think we touched on this about understanding what your appointment is for. Like, you do need to know in advance what you're going for. Often you usually get a letter to say you're invited to a scan or this is your... Mm-hmm. But even if you look at your breakdown of when your like midwife appointments are basic, but half the time they don't tell you, we'll see you in 2 weeks time for your next appointment. Okay, lovely, thank you. But you don't know what that next appointment is for. Yeah. So let's say you have somebody with a needle phobia and you're having your bloods taken. Like, you could get prepared for that, knowing that one, you can say no to those bloods because depending on what they're for, you might not need to, that might not be a completely relevant thing for you.
Yeah.
But also doing some activities to keep you calm prior to that.
It's making this appointment accessible, isn't it? Because we've got to accommodate every type of person, and not everybody, you know, some people are triggered by things, certain conversations, certain procedures. It's just, and have you ever known, because I've definitely known clients before who have rocked up to, say, a consultant appointment and the consultant didn't know why they were there.
Yeah, a lot. I'm doing this scan. I've actually been there. I'm doing a scan. I don't know what you're here for. And my client was like, I was scheduled because I had too much fluid in the last scan. And she was just like, right, but you're not particularly far along at the moment and your fluid levels are going to change. And I was like, this is what I've said all along to them, so that's why they're calm. And she was like, right. And then she's like, everything's fine. I really don't know why you're here. And I'm like...
And if they don't know why you're there, actually, had there been an opportunity to really firm up why you're going, or rather, should we say, if you make sure that you try and firm up what the appointment is for before you ever set off, it might turn out that nobody knows why you're there and then the appointment doesn't need to happen. Because let's face it, the fewer appointments you have, the better.
The better. Yeah, after that, they were like, right, we'll book... It says here, we'll book you again for 4 weeks. And I was just like, for what? what? And then my client looked at me. She was like, why do we need to come back? I was like, you don't have to come back. And the midwife was like, well, you don't, but we have to book in. And I was like, well, I just rolled my eyes. I was like, you don't have to book in. You can just say, parents declined. And then, they might have to chase it up their end. But ultimately, knowing what it's for means that you can... And then if you've declined it at that point, you're stopping that stress, aren't you?
And what you've highlighted is this isn't just about sort of high risk, significant appointments that might be discussing really serious conditions or risk factors. This could be as simple as knowing what to expect from a bloods being taken if you feel you need some extra support. It's like going to a dentist. You know whether it's a checkup or whether you're going to have root canal, right? So that you can prepare yourself. And you wouldn't expect that to be any other way. And it's the same here, that we need to accept that some people might be triggered by listening in to the heartbeat of their unborn baby. Some people might be triggered by... we're all so unique. And so it's knowing what to expect from the appointment, as well as just being knowledgeable on what's to come.
It's things as well, like... the responsibility falls on you for lots, but equally the responsibility falls on the healthcare professionals. So if you, for example, I don't know, let's say you in your first pregnancy was carrying twins and you may have lost the twins in utero for horrific, and then you're in your second pregnancy and you're having a single pregnancy and it's clearly your notes that you this is a really difficult time, but and it's a singleton pregnancy following a twin where there was a loss, and then yet the sonographer or the midwife goes, oh, it's a good job you not got two in here, do you know, like, are you sure you not got two because you've got a big, you know, like, it's things like that falls on them, and that's where I get stressed about this all, because yes, I want you to take up responsibility for your appointments. But there should be a level of care at their end. Mm. Like you said, when consultants don't know what you're there for. It's responsibility of the midwife or the sonographer to look at the file before they do the appointment and go, right, this is what's happening with this person this time.
I think what's difficult is you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And so just using BMI as an example, somebody who has a higher BMI who gets pregnant may have no idea that they need to know anything extra about their context of having a higher BMI before an appointment. And it's only when they go to that first appointment, if they're not following if they're not in the birth world like we are day in, day out, why would somebody, for example, with a high BMI, perceive themselves as any different to anybody else, which we know they're not?
Yeah.
But once they're in that system, questions that get asked that are completely different, risk factors that are applied that are completely different. So I will acknowledge that understanding what to expect and knowing your context is only possible if you know that you have a context that's going to bring with it additional considerations anyway, which a lot of people won't. And that's where actually there's not a lot that you could do because you don't know what you don't know. But once you do know that stuff, then it's subsequent appointments that you start to become the expert on yourself. That this might not start from the very beginning, and it doesn't matter if your level of informedness, I was going to say, isn't start from the beginning. You can become informed and become the expert on yourself at 39 and a half weeks. It really it doesn't matter.
So you see the difference, don't you? Like clients, when they if they're working with me for hypnobirthing, for example, and they come in and they'll go, yeah, I've got high BMI, so I'm having extra growth scans, and I'm having my gestational diabetes test soon, and I'm booked in to have an induction at this point. I can only birth at labour. And then you've got another person in the group who've gone, I've not got anything. Why are you having more scans? I've not got any of that. What did it? And then there's that moment where they look at each other and go, hold on, what is the difference in us now? Are you healthy? Yeah. Are you healthy? Yeah. Are you this? Yes. Yes. You're going there. What's your, like, and you wouldn't look at them and go, what's your BMI?
No, that is the
only risk, again, in speech marks, risk factor that has meant that this cascade of interventions started in pregnancy, that the person who's having them until that point may think that they are, that's the norm.
Yeah.
Then they realise it's really not. And they're actually just being pigeonholed.
And it might be as simple, the difference as being that they're on a different postcode and they're in a different trust and it's done so differently.
This is crazy.
Number three. So number one, know your context. Number two, understand what the appointment's for and hope that the consultant knows what the appointment's for. Number three, and I'm really always a bit reluctant to write this. So I've written down research and find out as much information as you can. And I've specified in an unbiased way. So by that, I mean, don't just rely on the NHS photocopy or the leaflet, or don't just rely on that. The reason I'm always dubious to write this down, even though it is really important, is it's also an incredibly elitist, ableist thing to put down. Because, again, how do you know what to research if you don't know what to research?
Yeah.
How the hell has the general public, who are not in the birth world like we are, it's really easy for us to say, do your research from non-biased sources. Well, when I was first pregnant, I wouldn't have had a clue where to even start.
No.
So I think what we probably both agree in is, ultimately, you can be as informed as you like. You can choose to do zero research and go in and still have full autonomy. You don't have to. So when we talk about making an informed decision, how much information that takes could be zero.
Yeah.
But where would you, what would you have said to you when you were first pregnant in terms of go away and do your research, but if the person you're talking to really wouldn't know where to start?
Don't go to Google.
Yeah.
Which is everywhere, where everyone goes to.
Because I'm obviously assuming that people don't have a doula. They haven't got, you know, it's a minefield, really, because actually
I'm going to struggle answering this because I have my birth worker rose-tinted glasses on and I don't know how to go back and look at I don't know. I really actually don't know what I would say to myself, because I'm in a different frame of mind and understanding now.
Try and look for things that are not just NHS branded.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Not that, because the NCT. NHS information is wrong, but because it is written in a purposeful way and it is biased and it's not always got everything, or both sides, it's not always got full evidence in it.
Definitely not balanced. I'm currently looking at helping the Leicestershire Trust write their induction guideline information. We've had the first draft, and I was like, this is absolutely horrendous. What feedback can you give? And me and another birth worker who I actually doulaed for, B, she's also in it, and we was like messaging each other, and we'd both written the same things in our response. Because it was so biased. There was nothing that helped, like, you make decisions. It didn't give the accurate benefits and risks. There was no evidence in there other than information from the NICE guidelines. And I was looking, and it was awful. And I'm thinking, if that's what we're giving to people to help them make decisions about induction, and that's the only information they're going to access, and it is completely biased and wrong. I was like, but then again, maybe that is, but maybe that's just exactly how they want it to work.
I guess we have to hope that people find, start searching for alternatives, start asking people for alternatives. I guess if we were going to assume some knowledge of additional birth support, certainly we would suggest to find a independent antenatal, completely independent antenatal, not naming any names of anything.
I already did a minute ago.
You did, I know. But find independent antenatal support, whether that's a specifically Hitler birthing, but even then, whether it's Hitler birthing or generic antenatal, just use your common sense and look over what they present, look over their social media accounts, look through their website and whatever marketing stuff they've got, and just go with what sits right with you and whether that feels like it's somebody that you can feel comfortable with. And I'm not suggesting, speaking from as birth workers, that you necessarily fire off hundreds of questions to loads of birth workers expecting loads and loads of like free advice, because that is then obviously using somebody's time. However, birth workers are more than happy to signpost you to where they can... They do know that you can get really high quality, unbiased advice. But also, I can't say enough how important doing a really good quality antenatal course.
Same. That's what led me here.
Because what you then get is, you don't just get the course, you get the person. And that's where an independent one is particularly good, because you get the person. So you do Leanne's hypnobirthing course and you get Leanne. And not, I don't mean as your doula, unless you choose to have her as a doula. But you then get Leanne... to ask questions to, you'll get access to her resources, and the same with me, you'll get me as a little resource in your pocket, not with all the answers but with signposting to where you can find that.
Have you checked the Client Hub? Because there's loads of resources in the Client Hub for this. Have you checked this? Check out. Exactly. Have you read this book? Go read this. Like,
so literally a client from a previous course messaged me yesterday, the day before. So not a doula client, hypnobirthing client, saying she has been diagnosed with a particular pregnancy-related condition, and she's been told she's got an appointment on Monday where they will do a birth plan. They'll do the birth plan. Not and basically that she'll have to have an early induction, and she knows enough because she has finished the course to know, is that right? Like, literally a question to me is that right? Do I have to be induced? What I've done is I've simply screenshotted loads of pages from her specific circumstances from a really, really awesome book about induction linked to her circumstance and her condition. I've then sent her a link to a Sarah Wickham page with loads of really good evidence on that, and basically said, here you go. It's not for me to tell you what you should do, but this is some unbiased stuff. Balance that with whatever your consultant says, and you then... So having that independent person just gives
it's
you...
so important. And also, it is. And if you have, like, your... And this is going to be coming on to number four. If you have done that course, then you are going to know what questions to ask and write them down before. So that's, for me, that's something that I know that I did, and I tell every person to do, is have questions that if you'd like a lot of them come to me and go, I've got these questions. I'm like, yeah, okay, lovely, brilliant. There's some of the questions you can ask your midwife, because I'm not in a clinician. And if you want a clinical point of view from that, that's what you need to do. But equally, those questions, if you've got them written down, you can ask your hypnobirthing teacher or your antenatal teacher, you can ask that consultant or whatever. But go in, like say with that particular client. So you're proposing this induction for this, but these are my questions I've got to you, and your answers to me will help me make my decision as to whether I'm going to accept this or not. And to me, that is the one thing I think is really, really, really important in terms of preparing for appointments, is having some questions ready that you want the answers to.
But written down somewhere, because often, if we're talking about people being anxious about going to these appointments, they're feeling nervous. Once you get in that space, the questions that were in your head are unlikely to come to the surface. Whereas if you've got them in your phone or on a notepad, at least you know, regardless of how you're feeling, you've got a way of going back to them and asking them.
Absolutely.
So definitely writing down your questions. But again, bearing in mind that with every appointment, new questions will come up and you might not have time. They might not be for that appointment. Then write them down somewhere ready for the next one. Or do some hunting, do some research. But ultimately, if it's a question your care provider needs to answer, then...
And then you can, like, with that as well, whatever response they give, you can get them to write it down, or you can record them. So that, again, so I'm fidgeting because my dog's like sat here and he keeps on farting as well and he stinks. So I'm just adjusting myself a little bit. But yeah, like, you can record those, because that's a way you can prepare for your, following appointments. By recording a previous one, you can take that into the next one. Like, okay, this is where we're at, or you record their answers so you can take them away to help you prepare for following things.
And can I record my antenatal or consultant appointment?
Yes, without a shadow of a doubt. You don't even need to get permission, by the way. You just need to tell them you're doing it, because as long as the care that they're discussing is about you, then you have permission to do so without asking. Yeah. You just say,
and you
do
have the right to do that. You are likely to be confronted with you're not allowed to do that.
I don't feel comfortable with you doing that. Well, if you don't feel comfortable, what are you going to tell me in that appointment?
That's their responsibility. Yes. Their discomfort is not your responsibility.
Absolutely not. And it worries me if they're not comfortable being recorded. What are they about to say that they don't want you to have evidence of?
Yes.
100%. That is probably why they're uncomfortable, because they're going...
Verbal data is about you is yours. That's why you're saying, Leanne, about if it was about somebody else, then obviously it's different because it's data about them. But this is personal data about you, as is a scan that you're always told you can't take photos of and can't video. Honestly, I think part of that is so you don't, because they'll then lose the fiver for the photo that they'll print off for you. But it's data. It's the same with x-rays and stuff, because people are always told you can't take a photo of your x-ray, and it's data. It's your health.
Yours.
Data. It is yours.
Yeah.
And so you are allowed to record a conversation, whether it's a voice memo or just put it on video and laying it on the table. But also in that recording, even if you're not digitally recording something, is if somebody says something and it feels like utter gobbledygook, it's maternity medical language, and you don't feel like you know what they're talking about, yes, it can make you feel tiny and pathetic and stupid, because I have felt like that. But it's having that courage, and it is courage sometimes to overcome that feeling of saying, could you just write that down for me? Even if you say, because I won't remember that. Oh, just blame baby brain, whatever it is, whatever you need to say to help you have the confidence to say, could you just write that down for me? Because it might be something you want to know how to spell so you can research it for yourself later. But I think you would agree with this, Leanne, similar to what you were saying before, is if somebody's going to write down pen to paper what they are recommending or suggesting to you, it may even encourage them to rethink what they're saying.
Because 100%.
Putting pen to paper, it's there in black and white, and you can re-show it to somebody. They are not going to blatantly lie to you or attempt to use coercive techniques in hard copy on paper, and it'd be very different to what they use verbally. So asking them to write it down is a good shout.
Yeah, and the next thing that you've got to add is about obviously preparing your responses, which I think is brilliant, because you, like you say, you could go into that fight, flight, or fawn response and go, oh, yeah. I don't know what okay. to say here. I blindly accept. Whereas if you've pre-thought, right, if they say this, this is my response. If they say this, this is my response. And on our hypnobirthing, on my hypnobirthing course, I talk about responses that you can say specifically in certain situations. So in it, but it could be like, they say something really questionable and you go, okay, thank you for that information. Can I have your pin, please, so that I can, and your name so that I can use, you know, like take verify this forward it, because yeah. it, to verify it, yeah. Or things like if they say something or they tell you they're doing something and you say no and anything more, right, I'll write down, say if you do anything, if they do this and continue, I'm going to class this as harassment, you can't continue, I'll be reporting. You know, like, that sounds really severe, I get that.
Yeah, but it's just, know, it, like, I think it's too simple to say sometimes, just say no.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's, we all know we can say no.
Yeah.
Just telling people, just remember, you can always say no. No's a full sentence. And that is really valid information because actually some people don't realise that their care is optional.
Yeah.
But in that situation, it's difficult to say no. So things like a delaying tactic. Thank you so much for the information. I'd like to go away and process it before I make a decision. When can I speak to you again? So, I mean, if you need to rehearse it. We say it over and over and over and over again in your head. So it's a script because you might know, do you know, I'm going to really fluff around this and I'm not going to be able to say it because I really struggle in certain situations. So just thank you so much for this information. I don't want to make a decision right now. I'm going to go away and process it. Or if you're on your own and you do have a partner, I don't want to make this decision without my partner. I'm going to go and talk to them first. Have a reason to take the information away with you.
Yeah.
But delaying, it's a little bit like a mentor once said to me, we were talking about the issues of not being able to say no and always being somebody who says yes to things people ask of you. And just saying, thanks so much for that invitation. I'm going to go away and check my diary and I'll email you when I can confirm. And then you're out of the situation where you can then go, do you know, I really don't want to do that. And then you can formulate a response on email. It's a bit like that. It's taking yourself out of the situation to give yourself just a moment to process. So any sentence that's going to delay.
Yeah. Agree. Like completely agree. And I just think it's like with a birth plan, it's not necessarily that you continue to go down the route that you've planned, but you've already had the conversation with your partner, with your whoever, to know that these are my options that I can reply to. And this is, I've written it down because I can. That's something I can say. And if I decide to change my mind, that's absolutely fine. Yeah. But I've given, you know, it just means you've already given some thought into that and put yourself in the driving seat, which is.
I think what I know is inevitable is going to come up in this conversation, which I wish it didn't have to. Is I think the final thing to prepare for, unfortunately, is prepare for a battle.
Yeah.
And I just, if I could not need to say that, it would be so wonderful. But it might be that your appointment is great and fine and you are respected and feel empowered and given all of the opportunity to make your own decisions, and you know, and that's absolutely brilliant. And I really, and people have those experiences at appointments, but people also frequently have appointments where they genuinely felt like it was an absolute battle. They weren't given respect, they weren't given autonomy to make decisions, they felt like they were everything was compulsory.
Mm-hmm.
So, me and Leanne want all of you to feel empowered and prepared and confident when it comes to appointments. I think just unfortunately part of that is gearing yourself up a little bit for potentially hard conversations, particularly with consultant level appointments or appointments linked to additional pathways.
Yeah.
I don't want to end on a negative, but
it is what it is. And that's why you need to prepare, because there's going to be certain language used, certain phrases used, particularly as well towards the end of the pregnancy where you're already slightly heightened. So preparing for conversations that you're never going to want to have but might have to have, and that's going to be used to get you to do something that you might not want to do. So for, and again, this is really quite a difficult conversation to have, but I know from experience lots of people end up opting for something they've always said they didn't want to do because they've been told that they're risking the life of their baby if they don't make that decision. Well, again, that's that preparation, knowing that that is something that might be brought up. If you go over your due date, the risk of baby dying is this. If you decline this induction, the risk of dying is this. If you you leave your waters going for more than 24 hours, your infection rate's going, which your stillbirth rate. And actually, if you know what those actual rates are, you can go in and take... Because that language at any point is horrific and should never be used. But especially towards the end of pregnancy, when you are emotionally so heightened, drained, anxious, all of those things, it's
maybe knowing. If you know, because you're an expert in your context, if you know that whatever your circumstance, risk factor, condition is, if you know that it may, however subtly, increase the risk of stillbirth, then be prepared that there is the chance that a healthcare provider may utilise that in quite a aggressive and coercive way, which it shouldn't be done. It should just be information that's laid out. If it's fact, it's fact, but you still get to make the decision. And it's not for anybody else to determine whether that risk is low, because for you, if that tiny increase in risk might be significant enough for you to want an intervention, which is, of course, absolutely fine. But that, unfortunately, when there is an increase in risk in certain areas, that, like you said, the language that can be used can be incredibly emotive language, and it's done for a reason. So it's maybe just going in there almost geared up for knowing... You may need to say, please, can we keep to the facts? Please, can we just talk about what we know right now? Please, can we not use that kind of language? I understand the risks. Please don't use emotional vocabulary, you know, trying to be real. And even memorising statements like that. But having, I think, one thing actually I've forgotten on here is, if you have a partner, well, number one, if you have a doula, doulas do frequently include coming to appointments with you in a package, or if they don't, they will be more than happy to come along, potentially for an extra charge depending on mileage and time and so on. But if you can, depending on the type of appointment, is bringing a partner to your appointment and them being on the ball as you are.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more.
What we will do is attach into the description-y thing with the episode, and on social media when we launch this episode, is we'll include some of our top sources. We've talked about where to research. We'll put this together and make a list of... I noticed you did something for World Book Day, which had an amazing list of really good sources of authors and their accounts. And that's probably the list, isn't it? But probably a list of really good sources of information of where to start when it comes to getting yourself really ahead of the game with information and stuff. But otherwise, thank you for listening, and I hope you feel more empowered and a little bit more ready for appointments. I mean, we acknowledge you're possibly also feeling still a bit apprehensive.
Yeah, normal.
Really, really normal. And if you've got any questions, you ever want to contact either of us, then we're always open to signposting you to any information you need. So from me, Meg, from Birth Evolution.
And me, Leanne.
Me, she's in bed, everyone. She's lying in bed. Didn't think she needed to speak again.
Thanks. I'm so professional.
We're gonna heareth endeth our podcast episode. See you later, everyone.
See you later.
Thanks for listening to Do La La, the podcast.
With me, Leanne from Birthhood.
And me, Meg from Birth Evolution. It's been great to have you here with us as we chat about all things pregnancy, birth and postnatal.
We'd love to know what you think, so please do leave us a review. Follow both Meg and I on socials and share with your friends too. They'll be really glad you did.